you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
All ministers and officials should now go to Case Orange. Repeat, this is an official colonial government broadcast.
And welcome to the Battlestar Galactic cast. My name is Mark Bernardin.
And I am number 6.
You are. I am number 14, which the model they decided not to make because it's just wobbly and misshapen.
You're perfect. Oh,
right. I'm like a drunk penguin, just short and wide and prone to falling down.
You know, I saw actually.
Tell me.
Ooh. Oh my goodness! I saw this little thing on Instagram the other day that it was a GIF or a GIF or whatever the frack those things are called.
Whatever the kids say.
It was about. It didn't have anything to do with penguins, except for it was when you arrive at a party and you don't know anybody else, you stick with the person you came with, and there was this regular-looking penguin walking amongst a colony of penguins. Mm-hmm. Most of them regular-looking penguins.
In the tuxedos and everything.
Yeah, in the tuxedos. Mm-hmm. But then amongst them all were these, like, round chocolate brown ones. And they were furry. Mm-hmm. You're not so furry.
I'm not that furry.
So I'm wondering what kind of penguin that was. Was that a penguin? Like, was that a baby penguin that didn't have his, like, regular
tuxedo
on yet? But he was full-sized.
I mean, what I remember from that great nature documentary, Happy Feet, is...
not March of the Penguins.
Not March of the Penguins, Happy Feet, is that there is a phase in which young penguins, even though they're full size, haven't quite molted into their full-on tuxedo outfit yet. And so they look kind of like just camouflaged Wookiees.
Okay, so that's what this was. Mm-hmm. And he or she just followed exactly like... Mm-hmm. And it was so cute.
Adorable.
So, yeah, that's what made me just think of you.
Yeah, I appreciate it. The short, fat chocolate waddle. That was my rap name when I was in high school. Short, fat chocolate waddle.
I need to make a placard.
Pretty much.
For you.
Just a little like a picture of me. Clang! Today we're talking about, this is a special bonus episode.
It is.
This is not going to be part of this is not part of your season. You can't be counting this by the numbers.
You've just been enthralled with Ron Moore talking about Precipice and Occupation.
Yes,
so.
And you've just escaped, the wonder and the joy of Exodus. And so now we're going to talk about the Resistance, the webisodes that led up to the premiere of the third season.
Yes.
We kind of chose to do it this way because the webisodes themselves are not full of like crazy awesome content, but they amplify and they elucidate some of the things that we know went on.
I was going to say fill in, but elucidate is a much better word.
I don't know. It's got more syllables, I suppose.
But it's like music.
It's a good SAT word.
Yeah.
did you have SATs in Canada? What were your high school standardized testings?
They were called governmental testing.
Oh, that
government
sounds
test.
So much more sinister. You need to take your government test. To do what? Can I be in the government? Well, no, that's not really what is it.
No, it's just we're marking you against everybody else.
Right. When I was a boy, low these many years ago, there was a very specific score. It was a 1600 was the most you could get on your SATs, and it was broken down half by English and half by math. Why? I don't know. I did far better on the English than I did on the math. Mm. I think I tapped out at like a 1190. But most of that was English. you're just bad with adding and subtracting and multiplying.
I'd be crap at it now. You know, I actually was really good in math. Mm-hmm. My grade 9 governmental exam, I got a 96% in math.
Holy crap.
Right?
I mean, not just general, holy crap. Anybody who does that well in math, holy crap.
I remember that specifically. And then when I went to grade 10, I had a very bad teacher who was also a bit of a pervert.
Uh-oh.
And I had to ask friends to stay after class when he asked me to stay after class for no reason. So nothing ever happened to me. So I had this weird sense of like protection way back when, but I went down from a 96 to a 70 and I never caught back up in math. I never caught back up because I didn't learn anything in 10th grade. And now I'm probably at a grade 4 math skill.
Yeah, no, when I went to college, I had avoided math the entire time until I had to take one math class to graduate. I was like, listen, I need like number line math. I need like, literally, I need 9th grade math. Like, what level are you at? I'm at subtraction, you guys.
I use my fingers to count.
Seriously. Like, if we're dividing anything, then I'm just shit out of luck. So What's the dumbest math you have? Thank you very much. I'll take it. Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly how we got here, but...
No, we don't. But we were talking about the webisodes.
We were talking about the webisodes, and somehow we ended up in the SATs. But...
Yeah,
I can't even connect that thread anymore.
But the webisodes were... something that was extremely new at the time.
It was.
This is, we're talking like what, 2000?
In 2006? 2007 maybe.
And webisodes were not even a thing. There was a few outlets that were trying to put out webisodes. And I remember specifically the production came to us and said, we're going to do these webisodes and you aren't going to get paid for them. And you're like, but we're our characters. We're on our sets. We're in our costumes. We're just working for free. Like,
this doesn't feel right.
I don't understand what this is. But sci-fi was ahead of its time in that way to give credit to sci-fi. Like they saw something that was a wave of the future, but it was, so they wanted to get in on the game, but at the same time, this was the early moments of it.
It really was. It was somewhat groundbreaking. And the Writers Guild at the time didn't know what to do with them either, because it's, again, we're shooting with, you know, real cameras on our sets with our cast, and we're providing you written material, and there's no system in place for residuals or for payment, and we don't know what to call it. I think that the fact that the WGA had no idea how to classify this stuff, but studios wanted to keep making them, was one of the factors that led to the Writers Guild of America strike in 2007.
I 100% agree with you there, yes. You know,
like, how do we decide how to deal with this? If you're going to be making this content and you're going to be spending real money on it, then we have to be protected, we have to be compensated, we have to be accounted for. And the intransigence of the studios at the time to come to the bargaining table and figure out the ways to actually make it whole led to a work stoppage that went for something like
five months.
From the tail end of November 5th, not even the tail end of November 5th, all of November 5th, 2007, to February 12th, 2008. It was pencils down, like nobody can write until we start.
It was an integral point in Battlestar, too. It happened to be a particular episode where I know we had the work stoppage. And it was an episode that it was almost like it was written where this could be an ending if the strike went on so long that...
Wow.
That the sets had to be taken down and everything like that. And there was tears and there was everything going on because nobody knew exactly what was, if we were coming back or not. But yeah, it was during that time. And I think this led up to a lot of that. The Writers Guild union is a lot stronger, in my opinion, than the Actors Guild.
Yeah, I mean, I think...
Actors Union.
Yeah, and I think that some of that is, even though there are far more actors than there are writers, especially working writers, I think the authorship that goes with the Writers Guild gives them a certain sense of power and leverage. And the traditional I suppose, underestimation and undervaluing of writers has given led to a pretty decent chip on the shoulders of writers. So, like, when they are angry about a thing, then they will absolutely bond and unify and roll mm-hmm. out, and, you know, we're making stuff up and we need to be compensated, and you're making all this money on our backs. I mean, like, it's a whole thing. But, like, when they decide to get angry, they get angry. And when they decide to strike, it's for real.
Yeah.
And I think the resistance was, if not the cause of, which probably not, but the idea of internet content.
Which I don't think we have figured out yet.
No, but like those first negotiations.
But we've made headway.
Totally. Like, you know, you could not, nobody could have foreseen in 2007 what the world looks like in 2020, where almost all content that gets produced in Hollywood ends up on a streamer in some capacity.
Especially the youngest generation, they would prefer to watch their show in this little 3-inch by 4-inch,
yeah,
2-inch by 4-inch thing. And I'm like, you don't want the surround sound? You don't yeah. want, like, don't want to sit down with some popcorn? Like,
no, not so much.
What?
Why would you do that?
You're really not experiencing it. But and the quickness of it.
Yeah.
That was me snapping my fingers. Mm. The quickness of it is in terms of it's instant to their, like, and I just, I'm old school.
Yes, we are. This is very much the OK Boomer episode of the Battlestar Galactica. Like, okay, granddad, I understand. I understand how difficult it was for you back in the salad days. but yeah.
Yeah. This was the very, very, very beginning of webisodes, internet content, mm-hmm. and sci-fi had the initiative to do it. I have to, even though I disagree with webisodes in so many ways, I have to give them credit for being on the forefront of it.
Yeah, they tried something new, and I think that it probably paid off for them, because it was, and I think it, even the budgets came out of the marketing department as opposed to production.
Yeah,
because it was seen as advertising.
You know, one of the good things, though, is, sorry, I've got a cat to pick up.
Happens to the best of us.
Max.
If they don't kill you.
No, I'm not going to pick him up one-handed. Somebody last night, we were together mm-hmm. at another podcast, and somebody commented on the cats. So I can't feel so bad about my cats making noise here.
No, don't.
But one of the things about these webisodes that I thought was a great thing was that it allowed, now even if they didn't get paid much, it allowed that a lot of maybe some of the periphery actors mm-hmm. that are instrumental in the storyline, hugely instrumental in the storyline, but to have something that maybe was a little bit more meat that they could grasp onto.
Mm-hmm.
And I know they were in these little 3-minute chunks or whatever it was, but we really now understood Jammer's, you know, the way he got into the New Caprica police force, mm-hmm. the way Duck became involved, the way, like, it really, you really got to explore in a way that you wouldn't have been able to on the television show.
Right.
And it really broadened out some of these characters that you see in almost every single episode and are hugely important characters, but don't get the screen time because you can't have a show with 25 major characters. You just can't do that. So to me, it was rewatching of the Resistance webisodes, because we know there's some other webisodes coming up in mm-hmm. season 4. It was just the possibility of exploring a little bit more what was on New Caprica, and exploring a little bit more of these characters and understanding, and then being able to layer it back into the show and understanding why they did the things they did.
Yeah, and all of that is totally true. And I also appreciate that we're not getting crucial information about the story as we know it from the webisodes.
Because, like, this aired before season 3 started, right?
Right. So, like, you don't know any of the things that are going to happen for the balance of New Caprica. So it's just sort of teeing things up. It's a little bit of like, oh, well, we'll ease you into the season and give you a little bit of context for things. but the show itself doesn't require it. And so these function to me like a little bit like deleted scenes of a movie you love, where it's like, listen, no, I don't need these to understand the story. I love the story. They amplify things that we already came to understand, and they go a little deeper in things we already understand. And it's sort of nice to be able to just add more. If you like a thing, you want a little bit more of a thing. But we, as we live today in 2020, lots of content.
2020.
Lots of content comes out that seems to require you to have like gone elsewhere for information to then bring back to mm-hmm. the main story. You know, it's there. There's a lot of, especially most recently in that latest Star Wars movie, where it's like, who's that character? Well, you need to have read the comic books to understand that. And what's this thing? Oh, well, they're tossing to a novel series that's over there. And what's this thing? It's like, oh, well, that's part of the video game. And you're like, what? Why do I need to go elsewhere to get to be able to fully comprehend the story that I showed up to the movies for? And so this isn't that. This isn't like, oh, no, you had to have watched this to understand the totality.
Now, do you think all like comic book, like Marvel and everything like that, that 100% of the audience has read the comic books or the graphic novels or whatever?
You can't count on that to have happened. I mean, the Marvel Universe began with like a third tier character that like nobody knew much about. I mean, Iron Man had been in the comics for a long time, but he wasn't Spider-Man. He wasn't, you know, the X-Men. He wasn't Superman. It's just, it's Iron Man. Who's he? He's like kind of a drunk billionaire, decides to build a suit of armor. Okay, that's kind of daffy, but sure.
I don't understand how Natalie Portman becomes Thor. I mean, she's like minuscule. She's a pipsqueak.
Like,
she's a what?
She's a tiny wee lass.
So why don't they hire somebody that's more capable physically? I don't mean myself. I mean, like,
I'm saying I would do it if you called me.
No, I don't mean that. I just mean like she doesn't look like she can kick ass. It looks like it's a stunt casting.
Well, I mean, it's ironically, that is a thing that came from the comic books. Is that Jane Foster at some point proves herself worthy to lift a hammer of Thor. And then when she lifts the hammer of Thor, there's, you know, beef and armor and all kinds of things that come with that. But
okay, see there, because I didn't read the comic books, there I'm being ignorant.
Right, but like
Excuse me, Natalie Portman.
But like she's in the first movie. Like she's part of that thing. So like I get it makes sense, but sometimes there's things in the comics that you just have to change. Because they don't work for you. There's lots of stuff in the Marvel Universe that is inspired by the comics, but diverts wildly from it. And you can't rely on an audience to do that work for you, you know, to like do all the reading. Sure, it's a little deeper and the experience is a little bit different if you do, but to rely on, like, okay, I'm going to do a dumb example that for you people listening to this at home will now be like 2 months too late. But there's a sequence in The Rise of Skywalker. It's the very first time you see Kylo Ren, and he's on some planet killing a bunch of dudes. And then I read online that same planet is the planet Mustafar, which we first see in, like, you know, Revenge of the Sith, and that's like Darth Vader's homeworld or whatever. That's where he decided to, that's where he lost his limbs, but it was like a volcanic, crazy, awful place. I'm like, well, how are those two places the same place? Like, well, if you had gone to this augmented reality website, you would have gotten the story that explained what happened to the planet. I'm like, I was never going to do that. Like, and you can't rely on an audience to do that.
Right.
Some will, sure, and they'll get it. But I should know, as a person bringing my $20 to the movie theater, everything I need to know going in.
But then doesn't a bunch of exposition happen?
But that's also part of the trick, right? Like, it's you have to have exposition. How do you do it gracefully? You know, how do you find the way? Or just do it expediently. There's the great scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark where, like, Indiana Jones comes into this room and there's two army guys sitting at the end of the table. And for 8 minutes, they explain to him everything you need to know as an audience. Hitler's after this thing. What is it? It's the Ark of the Covenant. What's that? Well, according to I've got my Bible here. Let me open a book and show you. According to the Old Testament, it's the Ark that held the Ten Commandments in it. And any army that held it before it, you know, is invincible. Oh, okay. How do you find it? Literally, it's just two dudes you've never seen before, will never see again.
Gets it done in 8 minutes, and then you're on to the movie, but the rest, everybody understands.
And you never have to do it again. Like, you never have to have any more exposition. Like, two army guys, just 8 minutes of laying pipe and then moving on. That's the non-elegant way of doing it, but sometimes you just have to do it. And then there's the super smart way of doing it. Like, Terminator does it very well. where it's like, here's this waitress and here's this robot assassin and here's this guy comes through time. And then he will tell you in dribs and drabs and bits and pieces what you need to know about, okay, well, no, they built robots to hunt humans. And it's in the future. Like, it's every movie that has to do that based on a premise that's a little fantastical finds a way to tell you what you need to know and what the rules of the world are and give you the people you can trust and the people you can't. But asking me to have read, you know, a dozen Terminator comic books and listened to a podcast right. and bought the toys and played the games in order for me to understand what's going on is a little inconsiderate at best.
To a lot of the population that's going to be going in to watch it, yes.
Totally. Like, why don't I understand this? Well, because you didn't do the work. Like, why do I have to do the work? I'm here. That was my job. I bought the ticket. I came in.
Now, do you think this should have aired? This did air. The fuck is wrong with me? This did air prior to season three.
It did.
But you feel like you want to. It almost wants to go afterwards,
which
is why we're doing it afterwards because we didn't want to be hampering what we talked about. And
yeah, and I think it actually does a really good job of filling in some blanks that once you watch the new Caprica storyline, once you get through Exodus Part Two, you're like, oh, how did Jammer get involved with this? What coerced Duck into doing this stuff? What was the beginnings of the resistance? Like, who was Nora? You know, you know, how involved was Tyrell and Ty, and how extreme was Ty compared to Tyrell, and all those things that we saw the later manifestations of, we now get the beginnings of.
Right, because this is really the beginning of the resistance in many ways, right? Because once New Caprica once we start the season, the resistance is already going. Totally. And we see in this the kind of the beginnings of it, the core group that we know from Galactica going, Adama's coming back. We've got to figure it out. We've got to figure out how to, you know, do this and trying to draw people in.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this takes place, at least the very first episode, establishes that we're on the 67th day of occupation compared to when season three begins. You're at like day 138.
Yeah, this is 67th.
I'm
surprised we don't see Ellen here.
Well, she was probably just sleeping away around the colony. She's with Cavill. She's doing naughty things to naughty people.
Yeah.
But it's also, even before we get into the story, it's using every part of the Buffalo, right? Where it's like, listen, we built these sets. We have this cast. Why not shoot more stuff on it? Why not take advantage of it? Like, producerially, it's really smart.
Mm-hmm.
And that we have to pay people more to do this. Like, they had to pay David Weddle and Bradley Thompson to write it. They had to pay Wayne Rose to direct it. They had to pay the DP to come out and shoot it. But
if I remember, they didn't pay the actors buckus.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that, and one of the reasons they did it, because it was super cheap. Right. Like, we were not forced.
But it was this whole thing. We don't know where this is going. But at the same time, I'm sure many of these actors were really happy to, and I would as well, like knowing now how these can be perceived is to go back and go, oh, wow, to actually be able to flesh out my character a little more would be a lot more interesting.
Right. And like, it's also not overly demanding of any member of the cast. It's relatively short, all in.
Mm-hmm.
It's about, 28 minutes. So, that's what, 4 days of production at best. And a lot of it is sitting and talking and occasionally walking in the sun. So it's not like, oh, running, jumping.
Right. They weren't doing that many explosions. They weren't doing that. It was more character work.
Very much
character development.
Yeah. But and so this is you're right. It's the beginning of the resistance. It's sort of Ty and Tyrell and Duck and Jammer, with a little bit of Callie in the background, and we get to meet Nora, Duck's wife, who the reason why he eventually becomes radicalized is she dies,
which we knew in the series, but we didn't know how.
But we didn't see. And it's also it's about the lengths to which you're willing to go to fight back, the lengths to which you're willing to go to rebel, and the lines you're drawing for yourself legally and morally and spiritually, and how you're willing to cross those lines for one reason or another.
And this is Ty before he was detained.
Mm-hmm.
He's got both his eyes.
Ty with both eyes.
He is leading the charge in the resistance.
Mm-hmm. He's still the one keeping the faith because he believes more than anybody else that if they don't get this resistance up and running, they don't have a chance of getting off of this colony. And there is no trusting the Cylons. There is no trusting an occupying force. No matter what overtures they might give, no matter what they might say, you know, I think Jammer says it at the beginning. It's like the Cylons show up and the first thing they do is build a jail. Like, they are not about learning to really peacefully coexist, if that's day one.
No. Although they leave the temple.
They leave the temples alone because they believe, they still respect religion, you know. And clearly, as we can see in the Resistance webisodes, more than some of the humans do.
Yeah.
You know,
Jammer does.
Jammer does. Duck is like,
listen, Duck is not.
I don't want to, like, I have my own relationship.
Nora does. Mm-hmm. Ty is.
Ty is ambivalent at best.
But he's completely mission based.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that I haven't decided yet on Ty. I don't think necessarily, but he's mission based,
mm-hmm.
and he will do anything.
Yeah, and he's not one to introspect very much because when he's not on mission, he's drunk.
Yeah,
and that is an evasion tactic more than it's anything else. Okay, before we get into this much deeper, ooh, hey, look, Nora's getting sexy time.
Ooh, sexy time with Duck and Nora.
But before we get into that, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
A hot break right now.
A hot break.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
That was a hot break with Duck.
Gotta ice myself off.
Like water off a duck's back.
Okay, it doesn't get too hot here. It
doesn't get too hot.
They're talking about, I think, religion at this point. She wants to join him to join her in the temple.
Right. Well, they're talking about religion and sex because she wants to have a baby. Mm-hmm. And he's like, "Will you come pray with me to have babies?" And he's like, "Listen, we can have babies without me praying. Because you're wearing lingerie in the middle of the naughtiest, nastiest resistance tent ever."
No, it makes me think, like, in this environment, why would you even want to bring a child into the world? But then at the same time, for the human population to survive, you need to procreate.
Yeah.
But it's just like the last thing I would want to do is bring a child into the world.
It's a pickle.
It is. It is a pickle.
It really is a pickle. Speaking of pickles,
yes,
of which this is not, the resistance, Ty and Tyrell, there'd been a stash of weapons that had been,
stored in someone's house
that got raided. And so they lost most of the armaments they had. And so they decide, like, listen, we know the Cylons never raid the temple. Here's the one place they won't ever come.
In the cover of night. Let's do it.
Let's move the balance of our guns into the temple where we believe they will be safe.
Which Jammer's really not happy about.
Jammer's not down with it. But Ty is like, listen, we're at war. War is messy. People get killed, good people, nice people. Get that through your head or get out.
You don't need that any... comes later.
Is that later?
Yes.
I thought that was then.
No.
Yeah, well.
No, the temple has to get attacked first.
Oh, damn it. I skipped ahead. I totally skipped ahead. Well, there's a really great quote that's going to come later. And we'll actually drop in Ty's voice saying it. So it'll be like a real performance and everything.
Right. I'll start it off and then you can finish it up. But okay. No, you're right. I mean, at this point, well, at least where we are, you guys may be ahead of us. So, Mark, I'm sorry. I may have like cut you off for no reason.
No, cut me off.
But it was, they've just hidden the weapons.
They just hid the weapons.
And it's now we see this whole thing with Callie and the baby. And it's almost like a baptism. It's not a baptism, but it's like a... Nora's holding the baby and
they're doing a little prayer ritual. She's burning some document where she wrote names on a page and offering it up to the gods. And then off screen, we will hear Silent Centurions coming to raid the temple.
Yes.
And two of these people make it out alive. One of them is an infant. And the other
yes,
one of them
the
is
baby
Callie.
Who we now know is Nicholas Stephen Tyrrell.
Nikki!
And Callie and Nora does not.
Yeah.
Because she goes back for her bag.
She goes back for her vegetables.
Note to everyone, don't go back for your bag if there's gunfire.
Listen, and I'm just saying, like, it's like the lamest looking vegetables. And I get it. If it was like a steak, sure. Oh. If it was like protein, I know one of us has different beliefs on vegetables. But I'm just going to say celery is not worth dying over.
Celery is a really good detoxifier.
I mean, it's, you know, I'm
for
sure.
For all that red meat you eat.
It has its benefits. I hear it's a really great juicing thing, but yeah.
No, they actually just say it's like celery. It's not bad.
Yeah. I mean, I'm fine with celery. Like I have no objections to celery, provided I can like drown it in either cheese or,
crunch.
It's good for your twofers.
Yes.
Nora's.
Did you used to make pigs on a log?
I never did that.
Celery sticks?
I did put like peanut butter. I just wedged a bunch of peanut butter in celery.
Peanut
butter and like raisins, right?
That's pigs on a log.
Yeah, we do without the pigs. Well, the ants on a log.
Oh, ants on a log. Yeah. That's what I'm thinking. Yeah. Pigs in a blanket.
Totally different anthropomorphic food stuff. Ants on a log, pigs in a blanket. Same thing.
Ants on a log and pigs in a blanket.
Pigs on a log. That's a lot of sausage you have on that there celery, young lady.
I'm sorry.
That would get me to eat more celery, though, if you told me that I could just wedge a shit ton of sausage in there.
I should just not try. Okay. Anyway. So, yes, there's been a massacre. One of the things I liked about this... scene where Callie and Tyrrell and they're telling Duck about Nora is, and I could be wrong because I don't see a lot of things, but when they tell him, he gets sick and he throws up.
Yeah.
And we don't often see that. I don't think you see people cry. You see people like moan, you see people, whatever, but you don't actually often see people
just
vomit
violently. Erupt.
Yeah,
with anguish.
I found that a very true moment in this.
Yeah.
It's a very small moment. They don't make anything of it. He just kind of turns to the side and spits up. But
yeah,
I found that a very true moment.
Yeah, there's a lot of like really intimate character work being done. Because again, like we're in a tent. We're not going to be outside. We're not doing a lot of, you know, production stuff. So this all has to be small and character based. And that is it's an interesting moment. It's also a little weird that like they're telling him about Nora and then he doesn't discover that elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe they're trying to console him and he's not willing to listen or have it. And, you know, he has his own like, you should pray to God or whatever. He's like, frack the gods. The gods are the ones that killed her.
And knocks everything down.
Knocks everything over. Here's Jammer.
This is where the quote comes in.
Yeah.
Shall I lay you up with it?
What? By all means.
Okay. They're talking about Jammer is questioning. And there's a whole talk about...
recruitment is up.
Recruitment is up because of there's 10 dead and 12 wounded, but 150 have joined the resistance.
Right.
And Ty says something to the effect of it being like...
All right, this is exactly what we needed.
And Jammer goes, 10 to 12 dead that this is what we needed. And Ty says something about payback.
Mm-hmm. It's like they murdered 20 million people and we're upset about
20 billion.
20 billion people.
Yeah. Hey, we're not playing patty cake here. These bastards burned up 20 billion of us. You're going to say that's our fault too? Inside of bat bawling like a little girl, you should focus on some payback. And then Jammer says, payback? Mm-hmm. Is that all this is to you? Blood for blood?
And then Ty says, we're at war. War is messy. People get killed. Good people. Nice people. Get that through your head or get out. We don't need any crybabies in this outfit. I tried to get a little... Didn't work, but a little time.
But it's so heartbreaking because it's you see both sides.
Mm-hmm. Like, it's absolutely awful that they killed this dude's wife. It's absolutely awful.
And 9 other people.
That the centurions came in and just, you know, raided a temple and shot people inside. But, you
because
know,
Jammer knows they put the guns there.
They do. And they know that those people wouldn't have died if the guns weren't in there.
Yeah.
And it's a quandary for young Jammer, for young James, apparently, is his
James,
actual name.
James, yes.
And then James apparently gets picked up and taken into the Cylon jail cell or interrogation headquarters or, like, cement hut. And has a nice little conversation with Adoral.
With Adoral, which I have a question. Mm-hmm. Because he's like, you're not under arrest. I brought you here because I wanted to talk about what happened at the temple. And then later he says, bringing in instruments of death into a house of worship is a sin. How does Doral or Doral, I'll never know how to pronounce it, know that Jammer will see his side? Like, how does he know? Do they have cameras up somewhere? Like, how does he know that Jammer is the one to go to?
All right, Jammer's, he's the weak link.
He's the weak link. Do we ever see that?
No, I don't think we do. I mean, I think that if you're watching those three people, you know, Ty, Tyrell, and Jammer, and you have to pick one.
And Duck,
you know, and you have to pick one to approach, it's definitely not going to be Ty.
No.
You know, probably not going to be Tyrell, like, you know, two sort of high-ranking members of Galactica Brass. Like, but this guy, maybe this guy. Maybe it's just a hell. For all we know, they also pulled in Duck, and they also pulled in Ty, and they also pulled in everybody, and had interrogated all of them and figured out that he was the weakest link. But we don't see that stuff. We just see an interesting conversation with Fruit Punch.
With Fruit Punch, that he like tells this whole story about the engineers from the humans and from the Cylons have got the, you know, the water filtration system and the sewage system and everything's all ready to go. Mm-hmm. And this is Fruit Punch that's actually grown here. Mm-hmm. I don't believe any of that bullshit.
It is a mind game he's running on him. He's trying to con him. You know, and the best con is you open with a admission of guilt. He's like, listen, our centurions went in there, absolutely should have, they were overzealous. They should never have shot people in that temple. But then again, there shouldn't have been guns in there. Like, we're not the only ones who bear some responsibility for that event.
Right. We didn't go in there because it was a place of worship.
Yeah.
The only reason we went in there was because a sin was against that place of worship because mm-hmm. there was acts of articles of death in there.
Right. And like, and also, you know, somebody told us the guns were in there.
I know. This is when we first figure out this that there's an insider in the resistance.
There is. And you know, somebody wanted those guns in there. Somebody wanted us to know those guns were in there.
Who we never find out, do we?
If I had to guess, or at least these webisodes are pointing pretty heavily on the fact that it's Ty. That Ty knew that there had to be a sacrifice to goose recruitment, and the best way to get this done was to make, you know, an awful example of Cylon overreach and violence. And like, if I put these guns here, the Cylons were going to shoot it up and somebody will be in here praying and they will die.
So maybe he tells Ellen.
Yeah. Or maybe he just, you know, slips a note, maybe an anonymous phone call, whatever that is. But I think it is kind of, you know, and then they cut straight to Ty after he tells him that, and Ty's sitting there with his little beanie hat on and doing this little like whittling thing, and you're like, oh, is it Ty? It's probably Ty.
Because he's got to amp up the
Right. Because it doesn't feel like it's Tyrell yet. It's not Tyrell passing word to Gaeta that this is what's happening. It feels like that's a Ty move.
You're right. I think you're right. Damn it.
Bad Ty. Bad slash good Ty.
This is maybe why he has so much guilt.
Mm. He's burdened with
about the end result with his wife and everything, too, is because he instigated everything from the moment.
Yeah.
But they're also up on Galactica, so he can't feel too bad about it. But that's the conundrum for him, right? Is there's totally. No right or wrong for.
Yeah.
There's no right way or wrong way for him.
We all did awful things. I maybe more than anyone else. And I will pay for that in my own way. Excuse me. Durrell has this quote at the end of it. Like, you know, some people don't like peace. You know, some people want to be at war because war is all they have. And like, we were trying to find a way to coexist. We're trying to find a way to build a bridge between humans and Cylon. But some people will never take that bridge.
Mm-mm.
Ty, chief among them.
Ty, chief among them.
You know, and Doral gives him this little key cardy thing and says, hey, if you spy anything else out there in the world that you think, you know, we might be able to save some lives by knowing about, just let me know.
Looks like a little USB card.
It really does. It's like a little flash drive or something.
A little flash drive. granted, in 2005, that was a fairly newfangled thing.
Oh, man, that was the zenith of personal storage. Mm-hmm. Like, look, man, I can put like 1 gigabyte of material on here. Do you know how many Word documents that is? That's like 1 billion Word documents or 2 pictures. You can have a song.
You can have
1 song. But yeah, so Jammer is a little bit conflicted. And as we know from the 4 episodes we spent on New Caprica, that he has been infected by this conflict. He says, well, maybe it is a good idea that we police ourselves and don't let the Centurions shoot up temples because they've got a bad slash good tip. Like, maybe there are humans there. We don't open fire. Maybe we talk to people. Maybe we figure some stuff out.
Which he does go into it with, like, good intentions.
The best of them.
He does.
Like, the best of them.
You just want to hug Jammer.
Poor guy.
But Tyrell is waiting for him.
He is. Like, hey, what'd they ask you about, man? Why'd they come to you? Why'd they choose you? What makes you so special? Did you give anybody up? Hey, come on, new fish.
He's like, oh, hey, you're here. Oh.
Hey, bud. How's it going?
they just wanted to know about the temple. Yeah.
Man. And also, like, nobody's wearing any red. Like, there's not a big color palette for the survivors on New Caprica.
Like, no, it's kind of drab.
It is very much like, you know, Aeropostale circa like 2000, but like that's some like depressed mall goth kid wear. Would you wear some colors? This is a deep purple. Why are you gonna look so mopey? I got this fancy hat on.
There was some colors earlier on in the series, actually. There was some colors. I think we noted actually there was some colors.
Yeah.
In the groups of people, or maybe that was once they were rescued and they were on New Caprica. I can't remember.
But yeah, I think the show had always been somewhat muted when it came to color, just so that when Six shows up in red dresses and white shifts and all that stuff, it pops more.
Mm-hmm.
But like, man, it feels like you're looking at a squadron of like soldiers in Vietnam, like surrounded by like mud and earth, and they're wearing these sort of like military fatigues of the olive drab green. And
but they would be, right? They would be dirty. Mm-hmm. They would be you don't want anything that stands out. You don't want to be trying to get from tent to tent at night and be in a, you know, it's not surprising why the military, except for in their dress whites or whatever, or the police or whoever it is that's in their dress whites. Is it police? Military is dress whites.
Yeah, Navy is dress whites. I think the Marines are dress whites. Police, I think it's dress blues.
Dress blues, yes. But you're not going to go out into the field like that because you're going to be a beacon of like, totally. Shoot me.
Unless you're Ellen Tye, in which case... Look at my shiny blue dress, you guys. Hey, sailors.
Hey, sailors.
What's happening? You guys having fun? Anybody need a friend?
Yeah.
And so Duck has sort of put together the not quite the temple, but his own house. He's put his house in order after he destroyed it in rage when he learned of Nora's death. And he's sort of, to a certain degree, finding ways to find purpose out of this tragedy. And in what seems to have been a baptism for Nikki, there's also like a baby resistance meeting in there as well. I suppose every time these guys gather, it's...
it's a bit of a multi-purpose meeting. Yes. Yeah.
And so Duck shows up and is like, all right, you guys, I'm in. I just joined the New Caprica police. Maybe I can find some information about who actually triggered the murder of my wife.
Yeah, he's joined the NCP in terms of actually being able to infiltrate to see who called the shots so that then he can seek revenge on who killed Nora.
Totally. And also specifically who leaked the information that the weapons were in the temple.
Yes.
Which is like a big deal. And it's, and we know coming off the heels of the resistance itself, what happens to that poor kid? It's like, there's a graduation ceremony and Baltar's going to be there. And you know what? I'm going to strap a vest onto my chest and I'm going to be a suicide bomber because
he's the first suicide bomber that we know of. Yeah. That we see the face of in this new Caprica resistance.
Right. And in the episode, like they do a relatively efficient job of just explaining. It's like, well, since my wife died, at the hands of the Salon bastards, I have no reason to live. So I'll do whatever you need me to do.
And they do some beautiful cinematography with the mirror that he's looking in being broken in half. Yeah. And I mean, you don't need to know more, but when you do know more,
Like
it's when you enriching. Meet Nora,
totally. It's adding depth and color to the story that we already knew pretty well and understood pretty well. It's additive more than it's anything else. Jammer is still conflicted. Jammer is still like, I don't know what side I'm going to be on. I don't know who I'm going to follow. I don't know how far I'm willing to go, you know? And then Jammer talks to Duck and Duck is like, nah, man, I'm committed.
Yeah.
Going all the way. Let's go all the way.
And Duck is now smoking again, which he wasn't because they were going to try for a baby. But this scene reminded me and Jammer's like, I thought you quit. And Duck goes, what fracking difference does it make? And it's like that sort of darkness of smoking. I have a friend that I don't smoke, but I have a friend that, like, when he's depressed and in a dark mood, he smokes because he's like, it's killing me. So I don't fracking care. If anything, it's just adding to the depression and adding to the sense of darkness. I'm like, well, maybe if you didn't do that, maybe it wouldn't feel so dark. But no, but it's in that moment that reminded me of that, like, just the desperation these people are under and the not giving a shit of so many trivial things at that point.
And it's the fragility of hope, right? Like it is always threatening to fumble out of your hands and fall to the ground and you're trying to keep it tight and hold on to it. But it's like a live fish you just pulled out of a stream. And it's like, it's always elusive and trying to escape, especially in a place like this. Holding on to hope is the hardest thing to do. And Duck lost it. Like, he's nihilistic. He's like, what does it matter? What do I have to gain by being alive longer? What do I have to lose by smoking and killing myself slowly? And then we know the end of that particular path leads him to suicide, but at least for a reason. For a cause.
Yes.
Which doesn't absolve it in any way, but it's still, that's that character's math. And Jammer's math is, I don't know, I got this here flash drive, and just walks off into the distance thinking about exactly what side he's going to be on.
What side he's going to be on. But we know ultimately what side he's going to be on.
Mm-hmm.
He just.
Yeah.
And he goes into it with the right reasons, but I think he does get a little skewed while he's in there but ultimately does as much as he can.
Yeah. I mean, he and Gaeta are kind of flip sides of the same coin, which is, you know, for Gaeta, he was just better placed. He was a better placed source, you know, and he tried his best for every bad thing he was forced to do to find a good thing that could help countermand that.
But he couldn't let that on. He wouldn't let anybody know because otherwise the gig would be up and he
Yeah.
Couldn't provide the information.
You know, and Jammer was like, listen, I think maybe if I can save one person from being shot in a temple because there was something there that the Cylons couldn't interpret in their kind of cruel math, then that's a thing worth doing. Except nobody quite sees it that way. Definitely not the circle.
No, but they don't know he joins.
Yes.
He hasn't joined yet.
I'm so glad we got to talk about this. Actually, really fascinating piece of sort of Battlestar Arcana that mm-hmm. is important in the span and the scope of the entire series, and noteworthy from a purely television history perspective.
And not that easy to find unless you have the DVDs, which I'm sure it is on mm-hmm. the DVD box set somewhere.
Yeah.
But if not, you can go to YouTube and you can watch the Battlestar Resistance webisodes in full.
Yeah. There's some enterprising young internet citizen has stitched them all together and posted them to YouTube. And, you know, the fact that they're still up leads one to believe that NBC Universal or Comcast or whatever is no longer as litigious about it as they used to be, because they were yanking it off the internet hand over fist, mm-hmm. even though they were webisodes.
Yeah, and they're certainly not the best. You can see it's not the best quality, but you can see what's going on. And mm-hmm. and for any diehard Battlestar fan, if you haven't seen them, I think it's worth seeing for sure.
Totally is the completest, and you will be glad that you did.
And even if you're a new watcher and you want to fill in, mm-hmm. I would suggest after Exodus Part 2.
Yeah,
but
before you get to Collaborators,
exactly.
So yeah, like watch it now. What are you waiting for? Just do it.
Download it now.
Come on. Just do it. You know you want to do it. Do it. I did it today and I'll do it again tomorrow.
I did it yesterday and I did it right now.
I'll do it again. I got a friend. We'll do it together. Man alive. So much allergy medicine, you guys.
You only had one Claritin.
I know, and I'm already feeling punchy.
Really?
Yeah. Let's go.
There was only Max was only around here to begin with.
I know. I think the cats are slowly, it's only been 3 years, but they're slowly realizing, let's kill that guy.
I did feed them right before you got here, so they're kind of in their food coma.
They're all sleepy and drunk.
Yeah.
But yes, as always, thanks to the good folks at Sci-Fi Wire for continuing to indulge us in this lunacy. Thanks to Bear McCreary for his kick-ass theme song. Thanks to Brett Boehm for continuing to make us sound like coherent, non-allergy-ridden people. And thank you to Tricia Helfer for continuing to ride this silly ride with me.
And thank you to you, Mark Bernard.
Whee!
Yay!
And we'll see you cats and kittens soon.
So say we all.